We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with an ad seen in the Aberdeen Evening News, read by Brian Perkins.
Colt's Hair Salon, December special offer. With every lady's cut and blow-dry, receive one child free.
Thanks to Maura Glyle for that. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome, please, first on my right, Andy Hamilton and John Craven. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, who's no longer got room for a top-up?
Oh, well, this is the government's Tony Blair's about-face on top-up fees, and apparently they're leaning now more towards a graduate tax. But there's an obvious flaw in that, because you think students are going to do their three-year course, and then they're going to deliberately fail their finals on the advice of their accountant. The obvious loophole. I pay tax. I don't directly... I pay taxes that go towards the MOD, that go towards defence. I've never been allowed to fire a missile. I've never personally used a soldier. Contrary to the gossip. And, but I accept that I'm expected to pay for the defence of the realm. I mean, similarly, I don't agree with the monarchy, but I pay taxes that go towards paying for the monarchy, even though Prince Charles has never rung my doorbell and then shook my hand and asked me what I do. So I'm a bit concerned that we've got a Prime Minister who doesn't understand how it all works.
The Queen was very good at asking what she did today, or rather, Thursday. Did you see she went to St George's Tooting? And they were all standing around talking, and she suddenly said, "I've often wondered why we have wax in our ears."
She asked you.
No, I wasn't there. I don't hang around St George's Tooting, hoping the monarch will turn up and discuss my ears. But she actually asked that, and then answered it, and nobody would say anything. And she said, I suppose to keep insects out. She actually said this, reporting the Telegraph. And I thought, that bloody barking.
The Queen once said something to me.
Hmm?
She said, "What do you do?"
Quite, you should have said you first.
Question time, the Prime Minister said he'd no desire to see students forced to pay huge sums of money up front. They should pay it round the back, like Bernie Eccleston, Richard Desmond, and the Hindu Chabadas. 2 points to Andy. John, welcome to the news quiz. And just to make you feel at home...
Mm-hmm. Those are the days.
Whose licence to kill could be revoked before it's issued?
Could this be something to do with fox hunting?
It could.
because there's this new proposal, this new bill just been put forward, which is going to outlaw stag hunting and also hare coursing, but will allow fox hunting in some places if it's thought that it's the least cruel way of controlling them. It's a bit like saying you can carry on fox hunting if the foxes think it's okay. You know?
But isn't it that they're going to allow fox hunting to continue in the uplands, which means that all the foxes will leg it into Norfolk, won't they? It's a highly intelligent animal.
Did you hear Anne Whittaker at lunchtime being interviewed on this, and she was sputtering about the bill, and she said, "It's a dog's dinner." And of course it is. That's what a fox is. It's a dog's dinner.
Hunt people always say that it's not the kill, it's the thrill of the chase. So the answer is to train the dogs to chase the fox, but then when they get there, just frolic with it. They just retrain the hounds. That is the answer. It's the killing bit that upsets people.
It's the killing bit the fox hunters like, because the gamekeepers have to make sure there are enough foxes for them to go out and kill. So if there weren't enough foxes, they'd just use asylum seekers or Catholics or something.
Once a year, they ought to be allowed to hunt turkeys, you know, between November the sort of 12th and Christmas Eve in Norfolk. Just Bernard Matthews, open the gates, 40,000 turkeys. Let's go after him on horseback.
Have you seen one of his turkeys? They can hardly walk, poor things. They're all tied up. They look like they're being questioned by the West Midlands Police. They're all like... trussed up, terrible state. So we probably can't say that, because he's a humanitarian person who loves all creatures... Bernard Matthews. Is he still alive?
I was mixing him up with Bernard Manning. I could never remember. He probably jokes about black turkeys.
The government has proposed a compromise on hunting, whereby fox hunting will be banned but nevertheless remain legal. For those of you who are still confused, Labour are now the ones who are pro-hunting, pro-George Bush, pro-missile defence, anti-union, anti-immigrants, anti-comprehensive schools and anti-poor people. Whereas the Conservatives are... 2 points. Jeremy, why is the government poxy?
Smallpox?
Yes.
The government is trying to frighten us. In the wake of September the 11th, we now have this kind of rolling war against anybody that they say we're having a war with at any given time. So it might be Iraq, it might be Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda's kind of unfashionable now. They're a bit passé. And now Al-Qaeda, this man Al-Qaeda, used to play Butlins. He, seemingly, they are going to attack us with Victorian diseases. And so to combat this scourge of terrible things, palsies and things and touches of the vapours that will be bombarded onto our capital, the government is going to do something called ring vaccination. Now, a buttock I'll face. No way.
But I think if they're trying to frighten us, they've chosen the wrong disease, because there's a marketing problem with the name smallpox, isn't it? It sounds trivial. It sounds like, you know, don't make a fuss, put a bit of cream on it. I think, you know, something like rabies or big pox. Really scary, this is going to get your pox or something. But I approve of the emergency measures, because what they're going to do is they're going to inoculate key workers against smallpox, and that's doctors, nurses, comedy quiz show panellists. Very important that if we have a smallpox attack that there are people who are prepared to stand on the sidelines and sneer at everybody.
UK has enough smallpox vaccine for half the population, and coincidentally, in a recent survey, half the population is against the bombing of Iraq. I wonder which half will get the smallpox vaccine. The last smallpox epidemic was in 1977, when Sid Vicious cleared his lungs over the first three rows that a Sex Pistols concert. Alan, why are pensioners having the door closed in their face?
Is it buses?
Yes.
Yeah. There's something called the Commission for Integrated Transport, and it is a man called Professor Begg, aided by Professors Borrow and Steele, who want our money. want our money. I never really go by bus, but if it's free, you'd go to places like the Tower of London and the Monument. You always say, well, I'm going to go sometime, but you can't really get around to it. And I just like the idea of having something free, but it's being taken away because Professor Begg and his team have said it must go to jobless people. I've worked all my bloody life and given the Treasury half my money to get a bus pass at 60, and now I can't have one because blokes without jobs are going to be going up and down these buses when I could be going to the Monument.
I can't imagine you on a bus.
It's hard. I travelled on a bus once. I had to go down Finchley Road, and I got on a number 13. When I sat down, there were six eggs in one of those little egg things beside me. And I know what to do with these, because I looked at these and I thought, well, how long have they been there? Is it a crime to take them away and eat them, take them home, or could they be rotten, or could they be a plant, could they be terrorist eggs? So I came down, when it got to the stop outside John Barnes in Pitchy Road, and I came down and went round to the driver and I said, what do I do with these? And he said, f*** off. And I thought... And that was the last time I went by bus. But 30 years have passed, and I think if I could go on free, I would, but...
The egg thing is unusual, I have to say, Alan. That's not par for the course.
Well, they're not always on buses.
No, no.
I thought they were a present for going on a bus.
They're not on the 137. They are on some of the 159s, but not the ones that stop at Brixton.
I used to get on the 68 bus.
Oh, you got a bacon sandwich on that?
No. It was caviar and canapes. We used to get on outside the Maudsley Hospital, which is a hospital for people suffering from mental illness. And the day patients used to get on the bus, and I had this very casual conversation behind me one day. One says to the other one, he said, what are you then? And he said, oh, they're not sure. They think I might be schizophrenic, they're not sure. And he said, what are you? He said, I don't know, but I walked through a plate glass door yesterday. But it was the kind of casualness of it, you know. That I began to wonder if they were perhaps a lot saner than we were, you know.
If Professor Beggs believes that this proposal will counteract what he calls transport social exclusion, or what we call the Virgin train to Manchester. We start round two with an announcement taken from the Bristol Diocesan Magazine.
Announcement of a talk from Cummins... Oops, Daisy. Start again.
Language.
Yes.
Oh,
it's like Liam Gallagher.
Could be Lorcs of Mercy next.
He's in the toilet writing Heavens for Betsy on the wall.
Here we go. Announcement of a talk from Campbellism to Christianity in One Generation will be followed by supper. A finger buffet will be provided.
Thanks to Frieda Lang for sending that in. Andy, who's got England by the googlies?
Oh, this is depressing. Why have I got to talk about this? This is England losing the Ashes to Australia in 3 hours. to be honest, I didn't really watch any of it. I think it's just they just showed the same wicket falling again and again.
Because all this nonsense about the Ashes having to go back to Australia because they won them, and the Australians haven't grasped the Ashes is the only trophy that was created for losing. And we've lost so often, we get to keep them. They're on our mantelpiece. It isn't something you win, it's something you lose, the Ashes.
No, they said that they couldn't possibly be flown to Australia, this urn, because the Ashes would be damaged. But, I mean, you can't get much more damage than Ashes, can you? You must have a lid for it, shall you? Put a bit of cling film over the top, it'd be all right. Get one of the passengers to hold it between their knees to keep it steady. You'd think, in this day and age, they can put a man on the moon. They can't get some burnt cricket stumps over to Australia. Put them in an envelope with a bit of tape over it, be all right.
Well, I think we should play them at French cricket. Do you remember that game?
Yeah.
Do you remember that game you used to play where you hold the bat the wrong way up and the person has to hit your legs? Because I don't think they'd be any good at that. Sissy games, we should take them on at. Fretwork.
England's chairman of selectors, David Graveney, said England had fielded their best team on paper. Sadly, they were forced to play on grass. Seems the last time an Englishman bowled a maiden over during a test was when Mike Gatting picked up that barmaid in the West Indies. It's believed to be the most embarrassing performance down under since Robin Cook's wedding night. Oh, they keep coming.
Oh, come on, leave it. Leave it out.
Here's one, lady.
Here's a funny thing.
John, why is Sherry never going to be flat broke?
Listen to the audience.
Back to the Blairs again, are we? That's the people of England. They have not spoken yet. Hear that low mumble. I love that.
Just hemorrhoids.
No, this is Cherie Blair's best friend and style guru. Her boyfriend, so it's said, is a con man, and he has negotiated a deal so that Cherie and Tony can buy a couple of flats in Bristol at a knockdown price. But he had been exposed quite a lot on the telly by good old Esther Ransom.
He's done all sorts of scams.
Mm-hmm?
Got a funny looking vegetable.
But I was in a bar in South Africa once and talking to this guy, and he said he had a very successful business in England selling double glazing. And I said to him, what made you come to South Africa then? And he said, Esther Ransom.
Why does Ewan have two flats at university? Is that a top-up flat, the other one?
This woman, Coplin, is actually a chiropractor as well, isn't she?
I went to see a chiropractor and he fiddled around on my head a bit. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm releasing some material. And then he said, now I want you to go home and I want you to have a bit of a lie down and go for a long walk and then do a few gentle stretches and then drink about 2 litres of water and then have another bit of a rest and have another bit of a walk and then try not to drink any tea or coffee alcohol for the next 48 hours. I thought, look, if I could live like that, there wouldn't be anything wrong with me. I'm broken, that's why I've come to see you, you quack. I tried a sociopath, they're really bad.
Peter Foster's a former boyfriend of the Page 3 model Samantha Fox, so it's the first time he's ever been involved with two flats. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, which gene geniuses aren't sure if they're men or mice?
Oh, we're mice, apparently. The Telegraph says we're mice with tails. Apparently, and the man on the Channel 4 News science correspondent said we're 99% mice, but with 30% banana.
I know I am.
And, yeah, we're very much the same as mice. But, yeah, no, there's a picture of a really sadly fat mouse. You couldn't see if it was sweating or not because it had fur.
And they made it wear a shell suit as well. Which yeah.
And they made it work as a security guard.
Apparently we've got the same genes to produce a tail, but we just don't bother.
Yeah, because we don't need a tail anymore. We got dustpan and brush. We don't need it.
Scientists in America and Britain have combined forces to decode the genome of the common mouse and have discovered that most humans share 80% of their genes with mice, whereas most estate agents share 100% of theirs with rats. Alan, what are the coolest sounds around at the moment?
Coolest sounds around? What are you thinking? I may need a clue on this.
Oh, I know. It's the sonic fridge.
It is.
It's a fridge made of sound.
What?
You get a lettuce and you just play at things like Winter Wonderland. Here comes Santa Claus. And things like that. And it keeps things cool and they don't go off. It's a sonic fridge, and that's true. 10 points. Yeah.
But it keeps
wonderful.
It keeps them cool because it compresses the air with this astonishingly high decibelage. So presumably if you leave the fridge door open you won't be able to get to sleep. I don't know. It's just a wall of sound. But I think if you increase the space, this is turning very sort of factual, isn't it?
I think it's going over most people's heads, Andy.
Yeah.
They don't look like a deeply scientific audience.
Yeah. It's hard being a scientist on this show, actually. I have to dumb down so much.
The ice cream firm Ben & Jerry's is developing a fridge that uses sound waves to lower the temperature. The sounds pumped through the fridge are tens of thousands of times louder than a rock concert. They're not quite as loud as the sound Prince Philip makes when a corgi craps in his slipper. Before we start the final round, here's a student's quote taken from the Neath Port Talbot College prospectus for 2003.
I am the only boy doing health and social care. Even though I'm surrounded by girls every day, I'm holding my own.
Thanks to Mance Elevens for that. Andy, listen to this.
That is Charles Aznavour before he learnt the words. I don't need the question on this.
Okay.
But this is this wonderful story about this lady who's received a grant. She's a poet. She received a grant of £2,000 to write a poem and then paint all the individual words of the poem on the backs of her sheep. And then she lets the sheep roam around the fields on the basis that, in accordance with sort of the random theory of quantum dynamics, that these sheep will keep rearranging themselves into new poems. Now, what puzzles me is that the words are written on the backs of the sheep, and it's quite a big field, so I think the reader will have to be 180 feet high, which I think is a bit discriminatory.
John will tell you that you only write on sheep after they've had Congress, don't you? They're tupped, and you get red. And I mean, you can't sort of write; it'll confuse the sheep. They'll walk around saying, "Have I had daffodils this week, or was that last week?" I think I'll have a go at Immemorial this morning. You put paint on sheep only to show they've been inseminated.
You're supposed to write on sheep after sex.
Your whole life is wasted now. Yeah. That diary's up the spout.
Yeah, otherwise they complain. They say, you never write. So what about the mental impact on the sheep? It puts them under... It's a lot of responsibility for sheep. They're probably out there now in that field saying, oh, for God's sake, we can't form this haiku. It's no good. I mean, it's very difficult.
A very poetic and literate sheepdogs out there. And they're going, come boy, pentameter, come boy. Come boy, sonnet.
Locals have reacted favourably to the project and say they really like the sheep poetry, especially with new potatoes and mint sauce. The project has been so successful that a new post of sheep poet laureate has been created. for one of the sheep, who's now known as Andrew Mutton. John, why do we not have any bananas, apples, carrots, broccoli?
Well, this is a survey that's come out, I think, from the Food Standard Agency, saying that we don't eat enough fruit and veg. In fact, we do eat quite a lot of bananas. We eat more bananas now than we used to do. I think we eat 2 bananas a week each, on average. But we're supposed to have 5 portions of fruit and veg a day.
What does that mean? Mm? I've never known what that... Is it 5 peas... Or would it be 5 marrows? What is a portion of vegetables?
It's they haven't worked it out.
It's not something you can hold like the guilder or the euro. I don't know what a portion is.
Well, it can be anything, really.
It can be
vegetable soup, or it can be, just greens with your meal.
You get 12,000 portions in vegetable soup. You pour the hot water on, and when that dust comes up, you've got 1,500 carrots looking at you.
Anyway, we're not eating enough, and they're about to launch this big campaign, 5 portions a day, Alan.
Fine, well, when they
come, no doubt tell you what a portion is in the adverts. If they don't, sue them.
That's not the most riveting news story we've ever had on this show, I have to say.
No,
it's not your fault, John. It's the newspapers. Obviously,
it's a food standard.
Taking a backhander from the broccoli board or somebody.
Jeremy, which straight-laced scientists have found the answer to a knotty problem?
Oh, shoelaces.
Yes,
2 points. Various people who believe in the creation refused to believe in the existence of shoelaces, and they thought all shoes were kept tied by God. And scientists have proved that shoelaces do in fact exist. Definitely.
That's not right. It's a woman who's got a grant to write words on shoelaces, and then every time you tie up the shoelaces, you make a different poem. Two points.
They found the most effective way of tying the shoelaces, and there's 3 ways. One's a crisscross pattern, one's a straight pattern, and one's called the bow tie, which is tied around your neck. But what's weird is the crisscross pattern has that weird thing some people do where one of the shoelaces goes all the way up and they thread it only from one end so that you don't use both hands, which I find a bit weird and perverse.
I do that.
Do you do that?
I do that.
Why do you do that then?
Well, a bit of excitement.
Do you put fresh shoelaces in every day? Do you have a lady who comes in?
Well, when my age, it's actually the threading and getting it through the eyelet hole that's the thing. And you've got to make the shoelace quite stiff. And you only do this by licking it. And, you know, a long, stiff shoelace early in the morning, up through an eyelet hole. It sort of sets me up for the day.
After years of study, mathematicians led by Burkhard Polster of Monash University, Australia, have discovered the best way to lace your shoes up, which is the way we do it already. According to Dr. Polster, there are 400 million ways of tying your laces, or to put it another way, 1 method for every pair of shoes owned by Elton John. Alan, your last question. Why was it a case of, baby, you can drive my car?
This is a 1-year-old called Oliver Webster. I know about these sort of cars. It's much more than buses. It was an inventive little thing, and he ate the transponder from his mother's key, and it disappeared inside him. And these transponders were the reaction between the key and the ignition system of, I think it was an Audi. And it won't go on unless the transponder is in the key unit. This is better than vegetables. Even I fell asleep before I got to that full point. Anyway, the RAC turned up, and it was brilliant, because the child had burped or something, and he had a faint scent of transponder in the air. He said, if you hold your firstborn against the steering wheel, madam, I think you'll find the car will start. So, with her priorities right, she slammed this kid against the steering wheel, and the car started. I don't know what happened to the kid. I suppose it's maybe still inside. He may be on all fours, crawling through Leatherhead, starting cars, and darling, why is the Ferrari going towards Brighton? I don't know, but a child just passed us on the inside lane.
But a baby is the perfect anti-theft device, isn't it? You just say, part of the car, say, just swallow that, I'll be back.
Her mother was stranded when her 1-year-old baby ate part of her electronic car key. She managed to start the engine by pressing her baby Oscar close to the steering wheel. The troublesome baby was blissfully unaware that he'd caused so much havoc. But Liam Gallagher quickly sobered up after he was arrested. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
This is from Francis Oak. The next morning, Lance rescues an injured seabird from some children who are stretching out its wings. The right one is broken, and the creature is clearly distressed. Lance puts his theatre nurse skills to the test by decapitating it with his machete. The team continues its trek to villages further up the coast, Kala, Karawala and Sandy Bay, where other humanitarian projects are progressing.
John.
Well, Barbara Roach sent in a nice little advert from her local paper, The Point and Post, in Cheshire. It's for a funeral director's 24-hour independent service. Private chapel of rest with panoramic views overlooking River Goyt.
Jeremy.
This is sent to me by my friend Sarah, and it's a press release from the environmental organisation Earth First. October the 2nd, the trial of two people charged with criminal damage at the atomic weapons establishment at Aldermaston was postponed in confusion after the prosecution failed to produce evidence that the site near Reading had ever been licensed to produce nuclear weapons. The defence lawyer stated that under the Anti-Terrorism, Crime and Security Act of 2001, anyone possessing or producing a nuclear weapon is guilty of an offence and liable of conviction to life imprisonment unless, under Section 48 of the Act, such possession or production has been authorised by the Secretary of State. Aldermaston has so far been unable to produce such authorisation.
Alan.
Oh, mine, Simon's from the Basildon Evening Echo. It says a 6'5" policeman who had to take an abandoned Lotus Elan sports car to Basildon Police Station wrecked it, Billericay Court heard. He is very large and the car is very small, and he had difficulty with the controls, said Mr. Frank Lockhart, defending, when PC Timothy Hall, 21, admitted careless driving. Fined £100, Hall said in a statement, the bonnet flew open and I hit a tree. The windscreen shattered and the back window dropped out, but I couldn't crawl through either of them because the roof was lowered in the crash and left me no room. Finding the driver's door jammed, I broke the side window in order to open it from the outside, but it would not budge, so I pushed it with my shoulder, and it fell off. The magistrates found there were exceptional circumstances why his licence should not be endorsed. Said the chairman, Mr. Rathbone, done, he was only doing his job.
Thank you all. And now let's look at the final score. Jeremy and Alan have 14 points, but Andy and John are this week's winners with 18 points. And before we leave you, here's an item taken from The Week magazine.
Alan Womb, 41, was to have been the highlight of a children's party as he performed his flyover in a microlight, dressed as Winnie the Pooh and waving at the children below. Unfortunately, the drunken pilot, an Australian, chose to dive-bomb the children instead, screaming, Winnie's gonna get ya! At the top of his voice. Minutes later, he crashed into a tree, breaking both his legs. Pooh Bear used to be my son's hero, said one angry mother. But now, whenever he's mentioned, he wets his bed.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news program, Andy Hamilton, John Craven, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Paul McKenzie, Simon Littlefield and George Poles. And the producer was Simon Nichols.